David spares his enemies. Chapter 69. David, now you have a good opportunity to kill your enemy, whispers a voice softly. If you kill him now, you are at once free. You will be delivered from all your troubles. Who said this? Who must be killed? Give me your attention. When David was nearly captured at Maon, he left that place. There were too many betrayers there. He fled to a more solitary place, to Engedi, which lies near the Dead Sea. There were high mountains and deep valleys at Engedi. Many caves were in the mountains. It was quiet and lonesome. Seldom anyone ever came there. It would be difficult for Saul to find David in these caves. David, with his 600 men, hid in one of the largest caves. No one can see him there because it is dark inside. But the people who are inside the cave can see anyone who enters the cave. These men must stay here and wait, because they know that Saul is nearby. When Saul had overcome the Philistines, he had sent some of his soldiers home. 3,000 men remained with him, and with this army he again pursues David. Betrayers tell him that David had fled to the wilderness of Engedi. He decides to seek him there. He cannot rest until David is slain. Determined and resolute, he sets forth to pursue David. His soldiers endanger themselves while they climb the steep cliffs and again descend to the depths. They are seeking David. Saul climbs with them. It is no wonder that the men of David are so quiet as they wait with throbbing hearts. Their lives are in danger. Suddenly, they are terribly frightened. A tall man stands at the cave's entrance. They can see him plainly in the bright sunlight, but he cannot see them because they are in the dark. They recognize this tall man. He is Saul, the king. Oh, if he discovers them, they are lost. They are caught as a rat in a trap. They scarcely dare to breathe. But Saul notices nothing. He is tired from all the climbing. While his soldiers are seeking David in this vicinity, he will go for a little rest. Soon his heavy breathing shows that he is in a deep sleep. The men push David, their leader, and whisper in his ear, "There you have your enemy. Kill him, and you will be rid of him. He never will be able to harm you again." David hesitates. Then he takes his knife in his muscular fist and creeps very carefully toward the sleeping king. Soon he kneels at his side. Will he kill him? No, he will not murder the king of Israel. Carefully, he cuts off the skirt of Saul's robe, and silently he crawls back to his men. "Why didn't you stab him to death?" they said reproachfully. "No," David answered, "I will not murder the anointed of the Lord." Perhaps the men grumbled still more, but David commanded them to be silent. He demands that they obey him. Saul awakes at last. He arises and leaves the cave. David quickly walks to the entrance and carefully looks from one side to the other. When Saul has gone some distance, he goes out and calls as loudly as he can, "My lord, the king!" Saul frightens and stands still. He turns around and, behold, There he sees David. David bows low before the king and cries, "Why do you think I want to harm you? That is not true, king. I was at your side as you lay sleeping. I easily could have killed you, but I did not do it. I do not want to kill you. Don't you believe me? Look at your robe. I cut a piece from it. Here it is." David lifts high the piece of Saul's robe. Saul looks. Yes, it is true. Saul now understands that his life was in danger. Oh, if David had wanted to, he could have slain him. He does not deserve the goodness which David has shown him. "Why do you pursue me in this way?" David continues. "I have never done you any harm, and I hope never to harm you. I will not seek revenge, but the Lord shall be the avenger, king." David is silent. Saul also is silent for a while. Then he cries out, "Is this your voice, my son David?" Tears come into Saul's eyes. Yes, he begins to sob freely. At present, he feels how wicked and ungodly he is, and also how good and noble David is. "I have wronged you," he says at last, "but you did not avenge yourself. You only have done good to me. The Lord bless you for this, David. I know that you really will become king. Promise me with an oath that later you will not kill my children." So David solemnly promises with an oath that he will not destroy the children and family of Saul. Saul then calls his soldiers together, and they return to Gibeah. He will not seek to harm David anymore. It will no longer be necessary for David to flee. So he and his 600 men leave this desolate and barren place. In southern Canaan, near the great wilderness where the children of Israel wandered 40 years, lies a large grassy plain called the Wilderness of Paran. Sometime a grassy plain is called a wilderness. In this grassy plain lies a village called Carmel. A very rich farmer lived there named Nabal. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. But this farmer was not a pleasant man. Oh no, he was covetous, a miser. Nabal only thought of himself and not about anyone else. One day, there was a feast at the farm of Nabal. His sheep were being sheared. That means their thick fur or wool was being cut off. This wool would be sold for much money, enabling Nabal to become richer than he already was. For this reason, Nabal was happy and prepared a great feast. Suddenly, his attention is called to a few men. "Who are you, and what do you want?" he asks gruffly. "We have come to bring you greetings from David, and he kindly asks whether you have some food for us." You are probably thinking, from where do these men of David come so suddenly? When Saul and his army left the cave of En-Gedi, where David had spared Saul's life, David went to the grassy plain of Paran. There he protected the flocks of Nabal. If robbers came, he would help the shepherds of Nabal chase away the robbers. If wild animals tried to come close to the flocks, he and his men would drive away these beasts of prey. All the time David was there, not one of Nabal's sheep was lost. Nabal is now celebrating the sheep shearing feast, and it is a good time to ask Nabal for a little payment for all that labor. Nabal shakes his head in anger and asks despitefully, "Who is David? There are many people today who are rebels. I have no intention to give him anything. Go away quickly." "You ought to shame yourself, Nabal, to answer in this way. How dare you do so?" "Children, Nabal knows who David is. His shepherds have told him. He knows very well that David had helped his shepherds, but he is too stingy to give anything. Yes, he even insults David. He calls him a rebel, disgraceful." Disappointed and angry because of this scornful treatment, David's men return to tell him what has befallen them. David is enraged. "What?" he cries harshly. "Did Nabal say that? He will know of this." David goes with his men to the farm of Nabal. His plans are to kill them all. He plans, but can he fulfill these plans? "Stop! Stop! David, may you do this? Can the shepherds and servants help it? Must they also die for the foolishness of this one man? Do you think you will have peace of mind if you kill all these people?" David is so angry that he decides to kill them all. Yes, guilty or not guilty, he will avenge himself. However, one of the shepherds witnessed how Nabal treated the messengers of David. He runs quickly to Abigail, the wife of Nabal, and tells her everything, also how good David had been to them. He does not dare approach Nabal because he is afraid of being punished, but he tells Abigail everything. She is frightened when she hears this and shakes her head sadly. "If my husband will give nothing, then I will," she cries out. "Hurry, hurry, before it is too late." Hastily, much food is made ready. Abigail decides she will take it to David herself. She will try to satisfy David even though her husband has done wrong. She does not tell Nabal what she is going to do. A few servants go with her, and donkeys, carrying heavy burdens, walk in front of her. This place is hilly territory. Suddenly, she stands face to face with David. As soon as she sees him, she jumps from the donkey and bows before him. "Ah, sir," she says, "please listen to me a moment. I am very sad that my husband has so shamefully treated your messengers, which so kindly asked for a present. I did not see those men, otherwise this would not have happened. Sir, you must not take my husband's words too seriously. His name is Nabal, and that means fool. And truly, sir, he is a fool. As soon as I heard what happened, I decided to try to rectify the mistake. I brought all this food along for you." They take the burden from the donkeys, and truly it is a kingly present which she gives to David. It consists of 200 loaves of bread, and 2 leather bottles of wine, 5 sheep ready dressed, 100 clusters of grapes, and 200 cakes of figs. "This is the blessing which I have brought for you and your men," continues Abigail. "O sir, do not kill guiltless people. The Lord has anointed you to be king, and you shall become king. Saul never will be permitted to kill you. The Lord will take care of that. Later, when you shall sit upon the throne, you shall always be ashamed because of the guiltless blood which you now want to shed." She did not wait long before David said, "Good, I will follow your advice. I will return. If you had not met me in the way, I would have killed everyone, because we did not deserve to be treated in such a manner." Abigail breathed a sigh of relief. She was successful, for she was able to stop David from committing those terrible plans. David also is happy. He thanks the Lord for this, because he would have done something in his anger, and which would have caused him sorrow for the rest of his life. He takes the loaves, the wine, and the other food, and returns homeward. Abigail also returns to her home. When she arrives, she sees that her husband is drunken. Therefore, for the present, she tells him nothing. However, the following morning, when Nabal is sober again, she tells him everything. Nabal hears how near he was to being slain by the enraged and insulted David. He was so terribly frightened upon hearing this message that he suffered a stroke and was completely paralyzed. In the Word of God we read, "He became as a stone." That means that he could not move. He lay this way for 10 days and then died. The Lord smote Nabal with this punishment because of his wickedness. Boys and girls, it was not necessary for David to avenge himself. The Lord has executed justice upon Nabal. A few days later, David heard that Nabal was dead. Immediately, he sent a few messengers to Abigail. He asks her to become his wife. "But is that permissible? Isn't David already married?" "Children, from envy and in anger, Saul gave Michal, his daughter, who was David's wife, to another man named Phalti. For this reason, David asks Abigail to marry him. Indeed, often in former times a man had more than one wife, isn't that true? Abraham and Jacob also had more than one wife." Abigail agrees, and she becomes the wife of David. The entire farm of Nabal, including all the sheep and other cattle, now belong to David. Nabal would not give him anything, but now he receives everything. In the darkness of the night, two men move secretly and carefully over the fields. Before them they see the black forms and outlines of many wagons. Many soldiers are lying asleep on the ground near the wagons. In the center lays Saul, the king. He also is asleep and knows of nothing. His spear is stuck upright in the ground at his bolster. A cruse of water is also at his bolster. Sentries were not placed to be on guard. Most carefully, the two men come near the sleeping king. What do they want? Surely they will not murder the king, will they? But why is Saul there? Why isn't he in his palace at Gibeah? Saul is out hunting. He is hunting for David. What? Hunting for David again? And after having promised that he would never pursue David again? Yes, that is true. He did promise, but he shamefully broke that promise. David had left the wilderness of Paran, where he had protected the flock of Nabal, and had traveled to the wilderness of Ziph. The Ziphites go directly to Saul as soon as they know this and tell him. Cowardly, isn't it? This is the second time they have betrayed David. Saul should have said to the Ziphites, "David and I have made peace together. I will not harm him any more. I have promised him this. He has spared my life, and I have seen that I did wrong by pursuing him. But Saul does not say anything about this. The time seems too favorable for him not to make use of it. Who knows, but maybe he can catch David now. Immediately, he marches with 3,000 soldiers toward the south to catch and kill David. He does not think of his promise. He came with his army to the hill of Hakilah. That night, they are to sleep there. Abner, the general of Saul, is also present. No one is keeping watch. That is foolish and dangerous because David sent out spies. He knows exactly where Saul has pitched his tent. Therefore, David is on guard, while Saul is not. One evening, David asked, "Who will go with me?" "I will," cried Abishai. "Who is he?" "Children, now you must give me your best attention. David had brothers and sisters. The name of one of his sisters was Zeruiah. She was married and had 3 children, 3 boys, whose names were Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. Remember these names because you will hear much more about them. Abishai was therefore a nephew to David, and David was an uncle to Abishai. These are the 2 men who were walking over the field so quietly. Carefully, they walk between the sleeping soldiers of Saul. It is very dangerous, because if only one would awake, they shall lose their lives. But the Lord allows no one to awake. At last they stand at the side of Saul, the king, who is sleeping peacefully. "Must I kill him, that promise breaker?" Abishai whispers. David shakes his head. "No," he whispers, "I do not want to kill him. The day will come when he will die. He may enter into battle and perish. The day will come that the Lord shall smite him. But I will not kill the anointed of the Lord." Boys and girls, if the Lord takes things in hand for David, it is much better than if David tried to avenge himself. That is what happened in the case of Nabal, did it not? Do you know what David does? He quietly takes the spear and the cruse, and with these they silently return. They arrive safely in the open field, and then David calls aloud, "Abner, Abner, answerest thou not, Abner?" "Yes," he answers sleepily, "who is calling?" "Abner, you have been very careless. Why didn't you place sentries around? Really, you are worthy to die, because the king has been in great danger. Try to find the spear and the cruse of water which belong to the king." In this interval, Saul also awakens. He hears what is being said and recognizes the voice of David. "Is this thy voice, my son David?" he asks. He realizes that this is the second time that David has spared his life. "Yes, it is my voice, my lord, O king," he answers. "Why do you pursue me again? What have I done? I have not broken my promise. It is your fault, O king, that I must wander all over. I am not able to worship the Lord with my people. I cannot go up to the tabernacle on the great feast days. And why? Why do you pursue me so? Saul does not know what to answer him, because all that David says is true. Therefore he agrees with David. Listen to what he says. I have sinned. Yes, Saul, that is true. You have shamefully broken your promise. But do you know what is still worse? Saul says it with his lips, but does not mean it. He has no true heartfelt sorrow for his sin. Oh yes, at this very moment he feels the evil of his actions, and he hastily promises that he will not pursue David any more, that David shall be safe from now on. But that promise is kept only a short time. However, David does not put any trust in what Saul says, but he puts his trust and confidence in God. For he says, "The Lord shall deliver me out of all distress. The Lord shall deliver me out of all danger." So David went on his way, and Saul returned to Gibeah. The things which David did here are written to teach and warn us. Children so often want to avenge themselves. Do you sometimes fight with one another, boys? And do you sometimes quarrel together, girls? Why? Is it not because you seek revenge? You then do the same as Saul. Ask the Lord often to keep you from that terrible sin, revengefulness. No, ask him to redeem you from it, because revenge lies in everyone's heart, also in your hearts, boys and girls.